Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar. We are going to be highlighting a webinar about the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program and opportunities for minority-serving institutions. Before we get really into the content here, I just want to make sure that everybody can hear me. So if you can hear me and you can see the PowerPoint presentation, just raise your hand in the GoToWebinar module so that we know we're in business. All right, so we have a few hands up there, so hopefully everyone else can hear and see as well. So throughout the webinar, if you have any questions along the way, please feel free to type those into the question box, which is also included in the GoToWebinar module, and we will address those at the end of the webinar if they're relevant for the period of time that we are in the slide presentation, then we may cover those at that point as well. But just keep those questions coming, and we'll get to them as we need to or as we can. Additionally, you'll see my contact information throughout the webinar, so if I don't get to your question or as you're thinking through things that you've heard on the webinar, if you have any other questions, you can feel free to reach out to me at sir@iie.org. So my name is Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder, and I'm a program manager here at the Institute of International Education, and I work on the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program. I'm joined today by David Levin, who's the Senior Program Manager at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the United States Department of State. So he's from our sponsor office. It's really great that he could join us today to provide the sponsor perspective and share some of his experiences through the program and his experiences working with minority-serving institutions. So throughout the webinar today, just a little bit of an overview here. We'll be doing an introduction of the Fulbright program as a whole. We'll be doing a brief overview of the Scholar in Residence program. Back on the 24th of April, we actually had a full overview webinar, which is now archived on our website. So if you missed that, I would highly recommend taking a look at that. It'll include the audio and the slides, and so you can get a more in-depth look at it. But we will kind of outline the program itself so you know how it relates to the goals that your institution may have as far as internationalization. We'll cover the application components, and we'll also talk about other tools and resources that are available. And then we also will cover other institutional opportunities as well as moving on to our question and answer session. So the Fulbright program itself was started by Senator J. William Fulbright. So you see here we've had, this year we're celebrating our 70th anniversary of academic exchanges, so this was a really great opportunity starting after 1946 to bring academics to the United States and to send academics from the United States to provide a venue for mutual understanding. You will see throughout the Institute of International Education and the Department of State website that there are many different branches to the Fulbright program, so we're covering the Scholar in Residence program, which works with institutions. We also have visiting scholar and U.S. scholar programs for academics and professionals. And we also have opportunities for students, both U.S. students and foreign students, foreign language teaching assistants as well. And we have English teaching assistant programs too. So we have a variety of different opportunities available to you. So definitely check the website to see in what capacity or what area you can interact or engage with the program. One thing to note as well that the program itself, the Fulbright program, is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. It's administered by the Institute of International Education. And in the case of the Scholar Program, the Division of the Council of International Exchange of Scholars. And then we also work with the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board on policy and on the final selection. All right, so the Scholar in Residence Program is a special initiative here for institutions. So institutions can really take a stake in saying that they would like to internationalize their campus and in what ways. So this opportunity allows for institutions to bring scholars and professionals from abroad to your campuses, and these campuses are often ones that do not often host visiting scholars and or serve underrepresented audiences. Primarily when the scholar in residence comes on campus, They would primarily engage in teaching undergraduate courses, and they would also provide cross-cultural and an international perspective to curriculum, to programming, et cetera. So the applications themselves are made by U.S. institutions. So if there are any individuals on the line who happen to be scholars and are looking for ways to engage with the program, I would recommend that you seek out a hosting institution in the United States to apply. For the institutions that are on the line, we will talk about the institutional application itself. So you're allowed to or welcome to apply for either activities over the course of one semester or a full academic year. So the application is currently open as of March, and we have a deadline of October 16th of every year. So if you have any questions, and you'll see my email address again at the end of the presentation, it's sir@iie.org. So institutions served by SIR, so this opportunity is especially fully utilized by certain institution types in the United States, which include minority-serving institutions. So we have our minority-serving institution types listed here. We are doing this focus webinar because we really highly recommend that people who are from or institutions that are minority-serving institutions, whether through the designations included here, including ANAPESI, HSIs, HBCUs, PBIs, et cetera, some institutions, too, that may serve a large population of minority-serving or minority students are encouraged to consider this program. So this is a really good opportunity for you to engage more fully with bringing a visiting scholar on campus. And you also may consider partnering with other institutions in your area. I'm going to flip over to the next slide, which has institutions served by SIR. But before I talk about the different PI groups, I wanted to, first of all, introduce David Levin and ask him to share some experiences that he's had working with minority-serving institution types through the SIR program and why this is such a valuable tool for them.
Cecilia, thanks very much, and thank you all for tuning in. The SIR program, which is probably maybe 30 years old or older, has historically had an interest in reaching out to schools that are less engaged with international activities and therefore may need this more than other schools in terms of opportunities. Many schools can do this on their own. Others don't have the range of opportunities that everyone has. And serving minority audiences who may not be as engaged with international as we think they could be or should be. So this is a great tool for that to happen. So because of the SIR program's focus, where we're looking at internationalization on campus, you know, we think bringing a scholar to campus from abroad is a great way to do that. And we've done well with MSIs through the years. With probably HBCUs probably leading the way in terms of the largest number of grants or the largest number of grants going to a particular MSI category, but certainly, you know, a good number in terms of HSIs and Asian American, Native American serving institutions, even tribal colleges, some predominantly black institutions. So this is probably our largest group of targeted schools, and I think we've done very well. And a number of schools have come back to us on more than one occasion where they've done very well. They've thought this was very valuable to them, and you know, some schools over the years have had 4 and 5 scholars in residence coming from different rural regions. So lots of good experience, lots of great opportunity, tremendously valuable both to the scholar and to the receiving institutions.
And David, could you kind of talk a little bit about sort of number of grants and odds and everything like that?
Sure. So any given year, we'll probably award between 30 and 35 grants, and odds are typically very good. So with 30, 35 grants, we'll likely get in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 to 60 applications in a given year. So the odds are clearly better than one in two proposals will be funded, which I think are great odds. And within that number that we fund, the 30-35 grants, probably 75% or 80% of them will be from the targeted groupings, whether it's an MSI, whether it's a community college, or whether it's a small liberal arts college. So your odds are great. And for those of you that have done federal applications before, or programs funded by the federal government before, you'll find that this is a relatively easy and straightforward application. And, you know, Cecilia will tell you there are a range of resources that can help you as you go through that process, whether it's Cecilia herself, whether it's material online, whether it's former grantees. We want to make this successful for you. We want to help you as much as we can to ensure that you submit a competitive proposal.
Thank you, David. And you're seeing kind of here, if you sort of add up the percentages, as David mentioned, that even though we break them down by the individual minority-serving institution type, we do have a very strong representation among the MSI groups. The other thing that's fairly interesting about the Scholar-in-Residence program is that really there is this two-way impact. So your institution would be, of course, benefiting from having a scholar on campus for a semester or full academic year to assist in achieving some of the initiatives that you're putting forward for internationalization. But also when the scholars are coming on campus, they have a very kind of rich and full experience because they're at an institution such as yours that may have a smaller representation of international faculty on campus, or maybe they're the only one on campus. So a lot of times we get really positive feedback from the scholar in residences talking about how they really felt like they were part of the community on the campuses that they were engaging with. So I also would say that we have a number of specific minority institution type stories that are included on the website. So you'll see one here where we talk about Fayetteville State University, who has been kind of a repeat user of the program. But you'll kind of see how through the experience of Dr. Harman Singh from India, you'll see listed here about the impact that it had on the campus as a whole. So with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, we have a variety of different origins or places where the Fulbright Scholars are in Residence are coming from. So pretty much it's wide open as far as where you're requesting a specific scholar or requesting recruitment of a scholar to come. And we have a variety of different disciplines that are touched through the program. So we've had successful minority-serving institutions who have hosted scholars. In this case, it's in computer science. In some cases, it's in political science specific to that part, that scholar's home country or region. We've had a lot of successes with, you know, historians coming here to engage with institutions. And so forth. So, David, could you share a little bit more information about some of the recent kind of institutional proposals or institutional grants that have been funded as far as what disciplines they may have come from and what they were achieving through the program?
Sure. So typically with the program, if you looked historically, we probably had the largest group of scholars coming in humanities and social sciences. But having said that, you know, people are coming in all sorts of fields. We've had people who've come in as performing artists. We've had people come in who would teach about comparative religions. We've had people who would come in and talk about business activities in their world region. People who've done applied sciences and the environment. We've had someone who came in from Canada and looked at indigenous sort of healthcare issues relating to Canada and the United States, and did that at a tribal college. We've had people in philosophy. We've had people in mathematics. We've had people in just a whole range of fields. We've got somebody currently who is at Cheney University in Pennsylvania, an HBCU from Africa, is a historian and has experience working with museums, and is helping Cheney do some historical tracking because it was the first HBCU in the United States, and is working with museums in Philadelphia and with a small museum actually on the college campus. So people are really creative in terms of the kinds of things they'd like to do with the scholar, and the kinds of activities that they would provide for those scholars. And as Cecilia said, I think with MSIs, because it's likely to be one of a very few scholars on campus, it's really a unique experience for them and for MSIs as hosts. And the scholars really do get a tremendous benefit from the experience, as do the host institutions.
And kind of just generally speaking, when you're trying to think about engagement with the Scholar in Residence program and how you can sort of increase mutual understanding in your community as well as increase globalization, we've seen some outputs from the program where host institutions have stated that they've gained new knowledge and new courses and new energy from the scholar. Scholars' collaborative relationship with host institutions and scholars in country resulted in a continued dialogue and exchange. Experience impacts scholars' fields, career, home institution, and home community. And the same could be said about your institutional community as well and the surrounding community. Other specific outcomes or impacts have come through internationalizing campus and curriculum, education abroad programs, virtual exchange and online courses, as well as providing a venue to have memorandum of understanding initiatives fulfilled. So just think of it in the sense that you have this particular individual with you for a semester, a full academic year, and you can really work through, like if you're thinking about starting a new exchange program for your students or for your faculty, by having this individual or this scholar on your campus for a semester or full academic year, you can really focus in on trying to work out the logistics of that, and then maybe make a kind of a test program or test exchange as a result as well. So these are some really great opportunities to focus in on that and to grow programs and to internationalize your campus. And the best part about SIR is that you're given the opportunity to take this initiative on your end to say, we would like to internationalize our campus, and this is how we would like to do it and in what way we would like to do it. So as far as the application goes, the application form itself is pretty straightforward. So David talked a little bit about the application itself. The form itself, you're going to be filling out information about your institution. And because we're having these kind of targets of the minority-serving institution types, community colleges, small liberal arts colleges, you're actually given the opportunity on the application form to outline which minority-serving type you may fall into. So you can include that there, so you're kind of earmarking your application to say this is where we're coming from, and then you're outlining a responsible administrative official on your campus, so this would be somebody who could sign off on any academic arrangements. As it relates to the scholar, as it relates to their time there. We also ask for another contact called the principal contact for academic arrangements. We also call this a faculty associate. So this would be a day-to-day contact for the scholar. So this would be somebody that the scholar could turn to on a daily basis if they had questions about access on campus, access in the surrounding community, to know where they need to go and when as far as their classes. This would be the person who would have the maximum contact with the scholar. We find through the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program that there are often a number of contacts on campus that will be providing for the scholar in some way or interacting with the scholar in some way. So you'll be given an opportunity in the narrative proposal to outline more individuals who would be working with the scholar, but this would be the person who would have the day-to-day contact with not only the scholar in residence, but also with our office so that we can kind of make sure that everyone's questions are answered and so forth. You're outlining the program dates on the application form as well, so we work a bit ahead in the Fulbright program. in that we are currently soliciting applications for the 18-19 academic year. So this does seem far off in the distance, but it does provide enough time for us to do our review, for you to make plans on campus and so forth. So you'd be surprised at how quickly the 18-19 academic year will come around. You also would provide information about cost share estimates of financial support. So we'll talk a little bit about different ways of financial support a little bit later on in the webinar. And then you are just outlining whether or not you're naming a specific scholar or requesting recruitment of a scholar. So if you're indicating yes, that you're naming a scholar, we ask that you outline their biographical information there. That would be used later on in the process to confirm that individual. If you are indicating that you're requesting recruitment of a scholar, you will be given the opportunity to include up to two countries within the same world region, and those would be the countries that we undertake recruitment in. We also have a section on the application called the proposal summary, which is 700 characters in length. This proposal summary would just be giving us a snapshot of what you're hoping to accomplish through the program, what the scholar would be teaching, what other activities they might be engaged in on campus as well as your outside community. This is a really helpful area where our reviewers can see in one view what you are looking to achieve through the program. The kind of bulk of the application for the Scholar in Residence program resides in the narrative proposal. So our narrative proposal has two parts altogether. The first part is the institutional profile section. So in the institutional profile section, you are kind of capturing information about the size and characteristics of your student body and faculty, giving us a sense of what your location is like, what the mission is of your institution, the scope of your academic offerings, as well as community resources. So the idea here is when you're putting forward your application, our reviewers aren't doing additional research to find out more about your institution, so we want to be able to see on paper what it's like, and later on as well, when if we're recruiting a scholar for your program, that way we can give the scholar or give the candidates a sense of what the community is like in your area. So we also would like to hear about your current international programs. So if you also have had visits from international faculty or students, you might outline that there as well, so that we can just see what you are up to on your campus already. And then that sort of leads into short and long-term internationalization goals and objectives of your particular institution. So how would having a scholar in residence on campus and how would the current international programs and any international programs that you foresee in the future, how would that play into your short and long-term goals as it comes down to internationalization? The bigger part of the narrative proposal would be the second part of the narrative proposal. So I talked a little bit already about the oversight section, so who would be working or who would be responsible for doing what during the scholars grant period. And then also, probably most importantly, would be the academic program of the scholar. So this would be the area in which you outline what courses you would like a scholar to teach, what programs or curriculum you would like a scholar to assist in providing an international perspective to, and then what kind of discipline or subdisciplines a scholar would be teaching in or engaging with. In addition to the academic program of the scholar, you might make preliminary plans for other on-campus activities. So these would be perhaps speaking in other departments on campus, giving a sort of institution-wide lecture while the scholar's there. We just really want to see that the scholar, when they're at the institution, at your institution, that they would be getting out into the wider community as well. So that they're not just sort of residing in your department, so that they can make contacts across disciplines, across the departments on campus. And then we have a community outreach aspect. This is probably the most unique element of the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, and one that I find the scholars often comment about in their final reports. They're always very glad and interested to get involved in your outside community. So these might be civic organizations. They may be higher education institutions. Not too long ago, we had an institution that invited a scholar who was teaching African drumming and African dance. And he spent a lot of his time there in local high schools teaching them African dance and African drumming as well. And so he really got into the outside community, and it kind of furthered the impact of his grant and really provided a lot of excitement and enthusiasm in the surrounding community. And then there's a section for professional enrichment. So if there are any professional enrichment opportunities you can foresee for the scholar, perhaps using your contacts at other institutions who might invite the scholar to come give a guest lecture at that particular campus. If you have someone in your academic community who might be going to a conference and the scholar could be included in that visit, that would also be a really good way to provide enrichment to the scholar. And then we've also seen the scholar being included in any orientations or workshops on campus as well. The sustainability aspect would be outlining how you foresee the scholar's time on campus sustaining in the future. So this really does tie to the short and long-term goals. So how would you continue on with the curriculum or with the perspectives that the scholar brought to your particular program or major while they were on campus? So, David, if you could provide some insight into some of the sustainability, like best practices that we've seen, and something to note is that this is not the only thing. We're always looking for new insights from institutional applications as well.
Sure. We've seen a variety of things. Cecilia talked about, the idea of an exchange program following the time that your scholar might be on campus. So we've clearly seen that in a number of occasions where the host school and the home school have formed an agreement that resulted in student exchange or faculty exchange. We've seen a number of cases where when the scholar returned home, they remained in contact with their host school and did online teaching. So the virtual notion is great. We've seen ideas where a scholar who was in business from Thailand worked with their host SIR campus and with the local community and formed a local Thai United States business council. We've seen programs where the scholar actually has returned to the U.S. At a later point in time to do some follow-on activities. We've seen some relationships develop between local organizations in the home community and the scholar's host and the scholar's home community when they return home. So the whole notion of what your scholar might do, both in terms of teaching but also across campus is valuable because it can lead to some other kinds of connections. So it's really think creatively of how could you maintain a relationship with your scholar when they return home, and how could you maintain activities that the scholar might have started. We've seen cases where scholars started international clubs on campus. We've seen cases where, probably very frequently, the scholar taught a class or taught maybe some guest lectures that evolved into a formal class, a formal course a year later. So people are taking the kinds of things the scholar is doing and then looking at ways they can expand on that. We also like to see and often see schools who engage with scholar residents use it maybe as a stepping stone and get involved with other kinds of Fulbright programs down the road. And that's really great because we like to see people, look at the whole constellation of Fulbright possibilities and look at what else might be available to you after you do this scholar residence program.
Also, in this particular narrative proposal section, we talk about the financial support element. David, if you could talk a little bit more about ways of cost share and what we're looking for in that regard.
Sure, happy to do that. So we're looking for a variety of things and looking for you to be creative in terms of how much you'll be able to assist in the support for your scholar. Some schools actually provide a salary supplement. If you can do that, that's wonderful. Not every school has the resources available. Some of them do. We've seen everything from $0 to $50,000 as a salary supplement. So you can see it really does cover a wide range of possibilities. You should know that that's not a factor that would make or break your proposal. But if you can do something like that, that's great. And we're seeing an increasing number of schools looking at the possibility of using Title III or Title V money from the U.S. Department of Education as a resource stream for you to tap into to potentially add to the salary that the scholar might be getting through Fulbright. If you can't do a salary supplement or something to that effect, some kind of cash contribution, look at what you might be able to do in the way of in-kind support. We've seen everything from some schools actually have housing on campus that they were able to make available to the scholar. Other schools have done things like a dining hall meal ticket, funds to enable the scholar to travel to professional workshops and scholarly conferences, things like memberships at local organizations, a World Affairs Council, a museum, some other kind of entity that would be beneficial to the scholar. We've seen situations where the scholar is coming with dependents, and the arrangements have been made for, let's say, a spouse to audit courses. We've seen cases where funding was actually provided to assist a scholar's dependents in terms of some of their, secondary costs. So we've seen a variety of things. And again, it's really up to you. Think creatively about ways that you could be of assistance to your scholar while they're on their Fulbright assignment.
Thank you, David. And if you have kind of questions as you're thinking through elements of cost share and things like that, please do reach out to us and we can discuss that. And I just want to reiterate what David said, that this isn't a main or contributing factor to our determination in the Fulbright Scholar in Residence application cycle, but it's just a way for us to see how you may be thinking through different elements of a scholar's time while on campus. There are sort of two tracks as far as the Scholar in Residence program, as I mentioned. Your institution can choose to name a specific scholar, so if you've made contacts with scholars abroad and you would like to bring them onto your campus for a semester or full academic year to teach, you might name them in your proposal. If you are naming the scholar, we would ask that you submit their CV as well as two letters of recommendation. One of the letters of recommendation should come from someone who could speak to the scholar's teaching abilities. Since the scholar would be engaging in teaching activities, we just would like to know what kind of experiences we've had in that regard. So, again, that's in addition to filling out their biographical information on the application form, but we just want to see what types of experiences the scholar had in a more expanded form through their CV. If you're requesting recruitment of a scholar, you are choosing up to two countries within that same world region. As part of your narrative proposal, we're asking that you outline information about the scholar that you would like to be recruited. So what credentials might be needed to teach in your institutional community? Are there specific disciplines, subdisciplines, or specializations that you're looking for? We will be able to see what courses you're hoping that a scholar would teach on campus through the academic program section, but we're just asking you to outline some of these nuances as they relate to your institution or to your department who's applying, because then we're, in cases where a recruitment application is successful, we're providing as much information as possible to our colleagues abroad to assist them in recruitment efforts of a slate of candidates. In the end, we would share that slate of candidates, any eligible candidates, with your institution, so your institution would then be the deciding vote as far as which candidate would fulfill your particular needs. But we just want to make sure that we can provide as much detailed information as possible to the institution. As far as odds with naming a scholar versus requesting recruitment, this, again, isn't really a determining factor. We assess the applications based on what you're putting forward. So you don't have more chances if you name a scholar versus recruiting or vice versa. We just want to go with what's most beneficial for your particular proposal. But, you know, we're just asking that you provide the information that is needed for either of the two tracks. And I would say that more often than not in recent years, we've had a named request versus recruited, but we're able to fulfill either one depending on which our institutional proposals are recommended for funding. Mm-hmm. Supplemental materials that would be required through the application would be letters of support. So these letters of support would be for your institutional proposal, not for the scholar themselves. So at minimum, we would need a letter from the responsible administrative official that you outlined in the first page of your narrative proposal. There's no maximum, so you're seeking letters or looking to seek letters from institutional representatives and community partners. So these may be people that you have outlined in the outreach section if you're outlining certain initiatives or certain programming that you would like to achieve in the other on-campus activity section and or the community outreach section. You may include letters from interested parties there. This really gives our reviewers a sense of the excitement, interest, and enthusiasm that would be in place in your institution should a scholar come to visit your campus. So again, there's no maximum, so definitely try to collect as many letters as possible to complement your proposal. And again, if an institution if a civic organization writes a letter of support for the application, we're not going to, you know, that doesn't set their involvement in stone. You know, we understand that the Fulbright Scholar in Residence proposal sort of evolves as the scholar gets on campus and different things like that. And even so, we find as well that you may have put some things as a baseline in your proposal, but then once word gets out that this scholar is visiting from Ghana or somewhere else, then a lot more institutions in your area may be interested in engaging with the scholar. We also ask that you provide sample syllabi or course outlines. So this would be courses that the scholar might be teaching or co-teaching or involved in. You can leave off any institutional policies or boilerplate text. We're just trying to get a sense of what type of course you're looking for a scholar to teach. David, anything else to add about the application components or the supplemental materials?
No, I guess I just would advise people to go through the proposal thoroughly and make sure that you answer each section of the proposal. It seems that when we review these every year, I think maybe the principal reason why someone might not get funded is because you know, they don't pay attention to all the components of the proposal. We really do think that each of the pieces combined gives us a total picture of what you're trying to do and how you're working to achieve the objectives of the program. So pay attention to each of the components.
And another good tip I would say too is that when you're putting together your proposal, I would recommend that you ask somebody from perhaps a different department on campus to read through the proposal to make sure that it's clear and clearly defined. So there's also another opportunity for you that you can send draft proposals to us at the Fulbright program here, and we're happy to read through the draft proposals and provide any feedback as well. And a lot of times when I'm reading through the draft proposals, I can get the gist of what's going on in the proposal, but there may be things that aren't as clearly defined. So it may be very clear to you and the other people at your institution who are writing the proposal as far as what you're hoping to accomplish or what you would like the scholar to teach, but you should definitely try to get as many sets of eyes to read through the proposal as possible, because when we send them along to the reviewers will need to know what's going on, not sort of draw conclusions about the proposal itself, and making sure that each of the elements of the proposal sort of work together so that what you're proposing through the narrative proposal plays into or works with what you're hoping to accomplish through your short and long-term internationalization goals. So I mentioned a little bit about draft proposals, so you are welcome to submit any draft proposals from now through the beginning of October, and we're happy to read through those draft proposals and provide any feedback to you based on what we've heard in our review meetings. So This is a really kind of additional opportunity for you to work through some of these elements. I'm also happy to read through pieces of the proposal, or if you'd like to set up a phone call, we're happy to discuss what kind of track you're looking to go on through your SIR proposal. And then the proposals themselves, as I mentioned before, are due on October 16th, which is a Monday. Once we receive all of those proposals on October 16th, then our program staff will conduct a technical review of applications, and we're looking to make sure that your applications are complete. So as David mentioned, just making sure that as you're filling everything out that you're including a proposal summary, you're including information about your institution type, you're including as much information about a named scholar or a recruited scholar, and that you're hitting all of the different components of the narrative proposal. So once we have completed the technical review, we release the applications to our external review committee, and the external review committee meets in December, and then in January, the institutional applicants are notified of the reviewed outcome. Also happening between January and February, the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, as well as the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, will review the applications, the recommended proposals, and will be confirming any institutional funding considerations here at IIE. From January through April, scholars are confirmed and recruited abroad. And then we would be providing host campuses with any candidates for their review. And then from April to June, so about this time of year, we're working on grant packets to send out to the grantees, and then the fun begins because you get to take over and welcome your scholar in residence on campus. So as far as application resources go, definitely get acquainted with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence landing page on our website. So we have some links here, and if you've since you've registered for the webinar, you're acquainted with the webinar schedule. If not, I would definitely refer back to that, and it's also important to note that any of the webinars that are going on are archived. I mentioned about the overview webinar that happened on April 24th. That's already on our website, and then we're focusing on different institution types, and then in throughout the summer, we're going to have focused webinars to do a walkthrough of the application, and then 1 month before the deadline, we'll have a focused webinar just to really take everyone's questions and to kind of go through any last-minute requests before submitting the application. So I also would recommend that when you're on our website that you open and start a Fulbright Scholar in Residence institutional application. That'll get you registered in our system, and then I can provide any additional information as it arises through that venue as well. And definitely take a look at our application guidelines. So the application guidelines provides a roadmap through the institutional proposals. So I went through very quickly, and David provided some insight as well. We went through very quickly the application itself, but there you can find even more information in the application guidelines as far as what we're looking for in each of those sections. We also have a section on frequently asked questions as well as common weaknesses that have been cited in the institutional proposals in the past. Definitely use and abuse us. Send us your draft proposals. Send us any questions. We're happy to answer all and any questions that you may have to get you to the point where you're ready to apply for the program. Institutional and scholar stories are included under the highlights tab of the Scholar in Residence website. We talked about a few sort of general examples, but there are even more examples that can be found on our website, so definitely take a look there. And you can also stay connected with us through our My Fulbright community. I went too far. Okay, so now another institutional opportunity, just in brief for you, is the Outreach Lecturing Fund, or OLF, program. David also oversees that on our sponsor side at ECA. So, David, if you could share some information about OLF, that would be really helpful.
Sure. It's a chance for you to bring a Fulbright Scholar to your campus for 2 to 6 days. And these are typically Fulbright researchers who are already in the United States. They're here for typically 3 months to an academic year from all over the world. We want to see them come to other parts of the country, to go to other types of institutions, to experience a little bit more of America. So we have an opportunity for you to invite scholars to come to your campus, and we have a travel fund that enables you to do that. We will provide travel for them to come to campus. We ask for you to consider taking care of them once they're on campus with local costs, housing, and so forth. But it's a nice way to do some very quick internationalization. We typically would like a month lead time between the time that you'd ask for a scholar and the time that the scholar could come to your campus. We have a list of who's available. It goes online. Every October 1st, we're listing who the scholars are, where they're from, what their fields are, and how long they're in the United States. You take a look at that. You determine who might you like to invite to campus. You contact them and see if they're available. If they are, then you as the institution make an application for them to come to campus, and we cover their travel costs and so forth. A nice way for them to come to campus to meet with students, to meet with faculty, to engage in other activities outside of campus. You know, just a nice way for you to do some very quick internationalization. And again, with this program, like Scholar Residence, we're reaching out to schools that are less engaged with these kinds of programs, schools perhaps that are less involved in Fulbright in general. So again, we're talking about MSIs, community colleges, small liberal arts colleges, rural colleges. So again, we're giving preference to MSIs and encourage you to, you know, take a look at that and see what might be possible. You know, are you doing a workshop on campus? It might benefit from having a scholar in a certain field come to campus and participate in that. If you're doing something in November relating to International Education Week, maybe that's a good time to bring a scholar or a couple scholars to campus to participate in the activities that you're setting up. So lots of possibilities. Be creative as to how you might want to bring a scholar to campus and take advantage of their expertise, whether they're talking about their academic work or whether they're talking about you know, their home country and culture. A great way for you to benefit from having them on campus and for them to get a chance to meet with you and your colleagues.
Thank you, David. And then the next slide we have is just a few more kind of bits of how you can stay engaged with the program or what the next steps might be. So definitely visit our website to become more acquainted with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. We also have a listing on our website of any institutions that have had Scholar in Residence grants in the past. So you could see if your institution has engaged with the program previously, but also it's a good way to see what other minority-serving institution types might have engaged with the program. You may consider reaching out to them to see how they frame their application. A lot of times they're really interested in sharing their stories about experiences, especially in the recent past, with the Scholar in Residence program. Or if you're just trying to see, logistically speaking, what you would need to do to prepare for an SIR, you can also reach out to me, and we can get you in touch with other institutions that might have had similar experiences as well. So if you have any questions or have draft proposals, definitely contact us. We're happy to take a look at those. You know, feel free to put any questions into the question box, and we'll address those. And if they're kind of specific to your case, you can reach out to me at sir@iie.org. But you were talking a little bit earlier, David, about engagement with, you know, international parties. So what if there was a minority-serving institution that had experiences hosting visiting scholars in the past? Would they be still eligible for the program?
Yes. Yes, certainly. But what we would like to see is ways that you can build upon previous experiences. So if you've had a scholar in residence before from a certain country, think about bringing a scholar from another country or another region. If you've had scholars in through other mechanisms, think about ways that this can enhance what you're doing. So you know, we've seen schools who've done an SIR 1 year, came back a couple years later and said, okay, that was great. Now we're going to ask for a scholar from a different world region as a way of enhancing another part of our internationalization activities. Or a scholar doing a different kind of activity, a different subject area. You know, think about ways that you can build upon previous experiences.
All right. And then, David, have anything else to provide as far as the program and goals and trends?
I think it's clear that schools that get engaged with this program really like it, because we see lots of schools who come back more than once. And it really does work well because of the fact that you're designing a proposal that says, here's what we'd like our scholars to do in terms of teaching, here's what we'd like them to do across campus, here's what we'd like to do within the community. You're designing the blueprint. You determine what you'd like the scholars to do. And by virtue of the fact that you're doing this advanced planning, often with a group on campus, a group of faculty, a group of administrators, typically means that you're really well prepared for that scholar when they get to campus, and it's really a win-win. It's a win for you and a win for them. It's not simply someone coming to campus and you're saying, sure, come and we'll work with you. You've thought through the best ways that you can take advantage of your scholars' time and their expertise and their experience. So it really does result in a really strong experience for everyone engaged. I mentioned the sort of the three maybe the most important kinds of things to think about in terms of your proposal. Obviously, what your scholar will do in terms of their teaching and their curriculum and so forth is central. But I would say proposals at times do not pay enough attention to what else will your scholar do across campus, engaging with students, with faculty, with administrators, and so forth, outside of the department where they're teaching. And then, as Cecilia mentioned earlier, the kinds of things that your scholar could be doing in the community outside of campus. Those three pieces really do sort of three pieces of three components really do combine to form the activities that your scholar will be engaged in, and they're all important. It's not simply what they're going to be doing in terms of teaching, but what will they do across campus and how will they engage with your community outside of campus.
Thanks, David. So we do have a question about if we have sample proposals that can be seen. Right now, we don't have any that are on there. We're working on that to find kind of the best way to present examples of best practices and so forth. But definitely take a look at the Fulbright Scholar in Residence guidelines, because that does provide in great detail what we're looking for in each of the different sections of the proposal. So definitely get acquainted with the wide array of kind of tools that we have. You know, David and I are very biased about this program. We think that it's pretty great as far as opportunity for hosting institutions. So on our end, we're trying to provide you with as much guidance as possible. So a lot of times it's just easiest to get us on the line and kind of set up a call to talk through ways that you would like to engage with the program, if, you know, talking through what's sort of appropriate, and then at the stage at which you're preparing your proposal, taking a look at the different components to make sure that it sort of fits the different elements that David just outlined before. So again, if you have any other questions, definitely reach out to us, to me, and we're happy to answer your questions. And I want to thank you all for joining us on the line to talk about this exciting opportunity as it relates to minority-serving institutions, and I look forward to speaking with all of you again in the near future. So, and thank you to David for joining today to talk through this opportunity as well.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.